Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, wrestling friends. Welcome to another edition of the Sportster Show, brought to you by thesportster.com. My name is Jim Parsons. We're going to have Norman Quarantine join us in a second here. This episode, we're going to be breaking down WWE Extreme Rules from Saturday, Monday Night Raw season premiere for Monday night. We're going to be talking the winners and losers. We're going to be talking returns, including Bray Wyatt, Brock Lesnar, the OC, Gallows, and Anderson. What's coming next for certain storylines in WWE? What were our best matches? What were our least favorite matches? We're going to talk both pay-per-views, walk through the winners and losers, and then chat a little bit of wrestling. All that on today's episode. Don't forget, if you're a fan of the show, we would appreciate if you downloaded, subscribed, and shared this with others. Go on Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating. All of that is really helpful. So, this is episode 27 of the Sportster Show, brought to you by thesportster.com. We're going to have Norman and myself, Jim, talking about Extreme Rules and Monday Night Raw right after this intro music and a word from our sponsor. Hey you, yes you, passionate sports fan. If you'll give me less than 60 seconds, I want to tell you how you can start making as much as 6 figures per year and do it all around your passion for sports. Hi there, my name is Jim Parsons, and I know there are at least 14 different methods sports fans can use to start earning a solid income off of their love of sports, and I want to show you the system I've created that will start allowing you to profit from your love of the game and turn your favorite hobby into a profitable side hustle. Let's take you from being a hobbyist to a professional sports fan and show you how to make money in an industry you love. Go to sportssidehustle.com, that's sportssidehustle.com, and download my free startup guide. I'll explain to you the four fundamentals that you need to get started and then show you where to go if you want to learn more. Hey, the athletes don't need to be the only ones making money off of sports. Go to sportssidehustle.com today and let's get started. Hey there, everybody. Hello, Sportster friends. My name is Jim Parsons. I'm here with thesportster.com. As always, with Norman Quarantine on the other end, also with thesportster.com. We figured that one out last week. The both of us work for thesportster.com. Norman, how are you?
Hey, man. Sorry. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. So we're going to be chatting Extreme Rules here on Monday Night Raw, because it is now Tuesday as we record this. Monday Night Raw and Saturday's Extreme Rules pay-per-view are in the bank. Let's start with Extreme Rules because it makes more sense to do that first and then talk about the follow-up on Monday Night Raw. Just overall, what did you think of that pay-per-view? It was one that we talked about without like real big stars, no Roman Reigns, no Cody Rhodes, no Becky Lynch. They weren't on the card, but it's still really good. I thought it was one of the best pay-per-views of the year. What'd you think?
I can't even really remember. I'd have to like actually sit and think about where it ranks on the list of top WWE pay-per-views of the year. I was a little bit underwhelmed, I'm not going to lie. There was a lot of stuff that I really liked about it, but I think overall I was just slightly underwhelmed. But then they did kind of, it was memorable, you know, we'll get to it. It was ultimately very memorable.
Sure. I mean, we'll take the matches one by one. And that way, when I say why I loved it and you say why you're underwhelmed a little bit, it'll make sense. So let's talk about the Brawling Brutes and the Imperium match, called the good old fashioned Donnybrook. It was a 6-man tag where kind of no rules, everything goes, tons of stuff surrounding the ring, can use whatever they want to. I thought this was, you know, tailor-made for the Brawling Brutes in terms of the type of match. Imperium's more of a in-ring technical group, whereas the Brawling Brutes just like to fight. So this was more up their alley. Brawling Brutes get the win here, which makes a lot of sense. Giovanni Vinci takes the pin here. And I think there was some concern from you last week. How do you have, you know, you don't want Gunther losing, things like that. I thought this match was great. An awesome way to kick off the card. Really set the tone for the rest of the pay-per-view. Lots of action, lots of fun. A big physical fight. I thought, man, that was a good decision to have these guys go first. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I really loved this match. I thought this was probably the match of the night, in my opinion. I think that it was, I think it was a smart decision. This is the kind of match that you want on first. The issue for me, and we'll get to it when we talk about the other matches, is that, like I said, this was the best match of the night. And so nobody else was really able to top it, in my opinion. And, yeah, but like I said, really, really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. I guess we have to wait till SmackDown, but yeah.
Yeah, this SmackDown's going to be loaded. This show that they're promoting here on Friday is going to be a very, very big show for 2 hours. The second, not the season premiere, but the follow-up show from it. This was my second favorite match. In terms of the in-ring stuff, maybe my favorite, but when you add the element of the story in another match we're going to talk about here in a minute, you'll understand why I'm ranking this one second. But I can see why you went first with this one. This was a really good match. Probably the weakest match on the card for me, even though I still liked it. I liked their booking decision. It wasn't perfect. There were things they could have done here a little differently that I would have been like, was Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey wins the SmackDown Women's Championship. I want to say she dominates Liv Morgan, but there were times here where Liv tried to get in a little offense and did so for a bit. And that was really my only beef with this match. Was I thought it was smart to have Ronda Rousey just destroy Liv Morgan, have her come in and say, you know what? You wanted this. You asked for this stipulation. You got it. And now I'm going to cream you. And they didn't really go all the way with that. I thought, man, if you're going to do that, go all in, like just have her destroy Liv Morgan. Mm. And then when you've got the smiling Liv Morgan and she's passing out to the choke and then laughing at the end after she's lost her title, I'm thinking to myself, okay, that doesn't really make a lot of sense if you are fighting back. But if you just get creamed, if you just get destroyed, okay, this is intriguing. I'm still intrigued by what Liv Morgan's going to do here, but Ronda Rousey is your new SmackDown Women's Champion. What did you think of this match?
I mean, probably the worst match on the card. Not as bad as a lot of people on Twitter seem to think it was, but yeah, certainly not. I don't think it was as good as their other matches. Certainly the booking. Yeah, I guess it makes sense to have Rousey win, especially if what people are speculating is going to happen with Liv does end up happening, then this will end up being the right call ultimately. And then I'm looking forward to seeing, I mean, Ronda's just such an interesting, WWE superstar, because you know she does have star power, she does have sort of mainstream appeal whether you like it or not, and she's obviously, she did take to the wrestling world very, very quickly, and it's hard having her on the roster. It's hard because you know you can't, there's not really anyone else you can have as champion while she's on the roster, you know, because it just doesn't really make sense.
Well, yeah. And I mean, right now of the available women that they have wrestling, I totally agree with you, because Becky Lynch coming back, she would be one. Charlotte Flair coming back, she would be one. If Sasha Banks were in the company, she would be one. Mm-hmm. Now, do any of them really stand up toe to toe with Ronda Rousey in terms of like MMA fighting and her background style and her, you know, real life ability to kick somebody's ass? No. But I think then in the world of WWE, they're on the same level, if not higher than Ronda Rousey. So I could see how they would be face to face. Liv Morgan never made sense for me in this equation. I thought it was nice to give her the title, but she never really ran with it. Like people were hoping she was the underdog here, and it just never really caught on. Like people were supporting her, but they just didn't, it didn't work. And so taking that title off of her, I thought was a smart decision. this whole laughing thing, whether it's a Harley Quinn direction that they're going with this, or, you know, rumors of Bray Wyatt, which I don't think are true. But if that's where they go with this, then, you know, I think it's good to shake up this character a little bit. Like I said, for me, it was just not, it made more sense because I don't see Liv Morgan. I called it on the last show where I was like, hey, if she does a lot of crazy stuff, like she really goes out there, okay, but she didn't really do that. She just tried to hit her with a baseball bat and use a fire extinguisher on her and stuff like that. And Ronda just sort of laughed it all off. So she got in some offense. It just wasn't really a contest. So yeah, it was not as bad as people are making it out to be, but it wasn't great. Mm-hmm. Drew McIntyre, Karrion Kross. I thought this was okay. Again, Karrion Kross is using a lot of Scarlet, so it's kind of old school heel stuff where the bad guy always uses the manager or the valet to get the upper hand here. I don't know that you need that necessarily with Karrion Kross because he's a big dude and he should be able to do this on his own, but he doesn't seem to be able to do this on his own. He did pick up the win here, so that's good for him, I suppose. This was his first real big match in WWE. He's had a couple little smaller ones, but this was really his first chance to sort of shine. I thought he did okay. I didn't love this match. It was physical, though, with the strap, lots going on there. But again, Scarlett's helping him out. Maybe too much. I don't know. Do you think I'm wrong there?
No. And I mean, I guess maybe against McIntyre, you want to protect McIntyre a little bit. So I guess that makes sense. Like, I don't think Scarlett's going to help him out that much if he's, you know, up against, you know, like, no offense to Ricochet, but like a Ricochet or something.
Sure.
But yeah, well, last time we said that we needed a really big performance from Kross, and I don't think we quite got that. I think they did just enough to put him in the position that they want him to be in and to kind of rectify some of the mistakes that were made with his initial main roster run, but we still haven't quite had that sort of star. I just haven't seen that star making performance out of him in WWE just yet.
Yeah, no, he came in with a lot of buzz, and I don't know that he's necessarily lived up to it. Not sure if that's his fault. Not sure if that's WWE's fault. Not sure exactly why he hasn't really risen to this star power. People were like, oh my God, Karrion Kross is back. Oh my God, they're going to push him like Karrion Kross instead of putting him in the stupid red Trojan gear. And then it just really hasn't gone anywhere since then. I mean, the biggest moment he's had so far in WWE was his debut. So it's been a little bit of a letdown. I think there's still a lot of potential for him, but we'll see. He did pick up the win, which is good because that moves him forward in a positive direction. I was surprised by this next one. Bianca Belair and Bayley, the ladder match. Thought the match was decent. Bianca Belair really using strength and athleticism versus Bayley trying to outsmart her opponent and use weapons. And Bianca ran to the ladder and tried to climb up it a bunch of times at the beginning, try to end this match as early as possible. A little surprising for me, but the outcome was the real surprise. I thought Bayley was going to win this thing. I figured that she would be the Raw Women's Champion. Damage Control would hold all the gold. Instead, and we'll talk about this a little bit on Raw, she has lost now two times in a row very quickly, Saturday and Monday. And it looks like Bayley is going in this sort of direction that she's the leader of Damage Control. They hold the gold. She's frustrated because she keeps on losing. That's what I see happening here. I was surprised by this. Did you think Bayley was going to walk away with the title?
I wasn't surprised. I wouldn't say I was shocked. Like when Bianca won, I was a bit like, yeah, okay. You know, that makes sense. Cause of what we said last time about how, you know, she hasn't really had, as in her reign as champion, she hasn't really had any sort of memorable pay-per-view title defenses. Certainly not that many. And so she needed one for her reign to, her, you know, for this reign to mean anything. I wasn't super, super shocked. And yeah, I am intrigued to see where Bayley goes from here.
Well, she laid out Belair on Monday's Raw after losing to Candice LeRae. So I think that feud is still ongoing. I don't know where Rousey's going to go. I think Shayna Baszler is the one that makes the most sense for me, especially if you're waiting for Charlotte to come back or whatever's happening with Banks and Naomi. But I thought it was a good match. A little surprised by the outcome. But again, you're right. Bianca Belair is a legitimate champion, and her winning any match shouldn't really be a shock to people. This was the best match for me, this next one. I didn't love the match. Like, I didn't really love the whole referee was super annoying. He's constantly in there shoving the microphone in their faces, even when you know they're not going to quit, asking if they're going to quit. They're just trying to find different ways of creatively saying no. The match itself was but the second half of this, the equation, like everything that happened storyline wise when Ray showed up and the rest of Judgment Day showed up and then Beth Phoenix got involved here, we had talked about this on the last podcast, like, how do you have Edge lose? And I actually was arguing. I'm like, if Edge loses here, I think it's good for him. They just got to find the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Because if Judgment Day can actually get him to say, I quit, that's a big win for them.
Right.
And that is what happened, but it happened way differently than I thought it was going to happen. I like this version way better. Like, I thought this was really well done. Like, Ray coming out and they kind of beat on him, and then they go back to working on Edge again. Then Beth Phoenix comes out to save the day, and they Rhea Ripley starts hitting on hitting Beth, and she hits her with brass knuckles, knocks her out. And then they make Edge watch as they're about to concerto Beth Phoenix. So of course he's going to say, I quit. Like, absolutely. You want to save your wife.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley levels her anyway. And so now we have, you know, Edge and Beth maybe written off television, Beth for out for sure for a while, but it sets up a Beth Phoenix and Rhea Ripley match, which I think is going to be awesome. It sets up Edge coming back and getting retribution on Finn Balor, probably not right away because of what we saw on Raw here on Monday. But I really like this. I thought this was maybe outside of Jey Uso and Roman Reigns when they first fought each other and Jey was trying to get the, you know, the approval and the head of the family spot. That was really good storytelling to me. This might have been the best story that WWE has told in a long time. Like, I thought this was extremely well written and very well done. The match was but the story was awesome. And so that is why I'm giving it the my match of the night, just because I'm including that in the equation.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, for the actual in-ring stuff and actual like match, I've definitely preferred the opener, but this was the stuff, the stuff that happened around this match was definitely the most entertaining stuff of the night. I think it was really well done. It was kind of what we were talking about last week, what we wanted to see happen and what we thought needed to happen. And most of that did happen. And I did predict that I thought Beth was going to get involved and that was going to be how they were going to get Edge to quit. Cause also there's shades of, if you remember when, I don't know, the way this match ended reminded me of when Edge, when Rollins was going to curb stomp Edge onto the Money in the Bank briefcase or something, right? And he had to get John Cena, and John Cena had to reinstate the authority. Otherwise, Rollins was going to murder Edge. Yeah, so there was some shades of that there. I thought, we talked about this in the work Slack afterwards. Immediately after this, Finn Balor was suddenly the biggest heel in the company, right? Other than Roman. And it was like a short, they made Judgment Day, with all the stuff they did in this match, they actually made Judgment Day seem more formidable and more convincing than they ever, than they have been up until this point. And yeah, so I thought it was all really, really, really well done. I do think some of the momentum was a little bit lost by the things, stuff that happened on Monday, but I totally get why they did the stuff on Monday. We'll talk about that when we get there. But yeah, overall I thought it was really good.
Well, the stuff on Monday, which we'll talk about, tied a lot of things together for me, because I had questions leading into Extreme Rules. I'm like, why do they keep going after certain people?
Right.
And then it all started to come together on Monday. What I really, really liked about this, and you mentioned it, was the where Judgment Day has sort of taken a next step. There's not a single member of Judgment Day at this point that you don't hate. Like,
right.
You hate them all, and the boos and the jeers and the stuff from the crowd is so loud. It's so good, right? It's just, there's very few stables or groups. Damian Priest, who a lot of people can't stand, and not because he's go away, just because he's supposed to be a bad guy. He's the least hated of the four.
Yeah.
And that's perfect, right? When you have Dominic, every time he opens his mouth, they boo the crap out of him. Finn is getting booed like crazy. Rhea Ripley is despised by a lot of people. It's perfect. Like, it's exactly what you wanted for this group. And I think you're right. I don't think until they had this match at Extreme Rules were they really there yet. And I think they're starting to get there. Matt Riddle, Seth Rollins, the fight pit match. This might have been, Ronda Rousey and Liv Morgan will be tied with me for this one. I didn't love this. I didn't think that this was, I felt like it was a little rushed. I didn't love the feel of the fight pit in the really big environment, the neon colored platform. Daniel Cormier, we talked about him being involved. I thought he did a decent job. It wasn't as distracting as I was thinking it might be, but it wasn't great for me. And Seth Rollins taps out to Riddle. The high spot where he does, I don't know what it's called, the floating bro or something, where he jumps off the platform. And like, I thought that was a cool spot, but I sort of felt like the end just sort of came out of nowhere. Like, it just was like, just ended. And I was like, oh, that was interesting. So I never really got that big main event feel out of this. Like, I was really looking forward to it. I thought it was going to be pretty cool. And it never hit that stride for me. Now, Seth Rollins explained why he tapped out on Monday's Raw. It logically makes sense so he could fight for the United States Championship. But I just didn't love this. This was not my favorite. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't awful. It just didn't love it.
Yeah, I agree. It was a little bit awkward. Crowd seemed a little bit dead for most of it, I thought. The finish, what you described, I agree. When I was watching it in the moment, I was like, oh, that came out of nowhere. But then when I rewatched it and when they showed the replay, it was pretty clear that they were telegraphing a finish. Mm-hmm. But it was only, you know, that's with the power of hindsight. It's just kind of weird. I don't know if it's like, sometimes I feel like it's a good thing when the finish just kind of comes out of nowhere, right? And it isn't, and it doesn't seem super, super telegraphed. But yeah, it certainly didn't get the reaction that they were hoping for, I don't think. I don't know if these two even really needed the fight pit element. I guess because it's Extreme Rules, I understand the need to put them in a gimmick match. I don't know that this really added that much, to be honest. Definitely a little bit of a letdown, and not really a super, you know, I mean, memorable, but not necessarily for the right reasons. Main event.
Yeah, no, fight pit to me, when I hear that name in my head, and I had admitted when we watched, I'd really never seen one of those matches all the way through. I'd caught in glimpses of the Riddle and the Thatcher match and stuff, but I was kind of like, I want it to be darker and smaller and more closed in, and it didn't have that feel for me. There were two things that I will say, like, you're right in the finish, and I did talk about this on the Facebook Live right after the pay-per-view. Somebody had said, oh man, he tapped out so quick. I'm like, keep in mind that when he's throwing Riddle around the cage, he's still in the hole. Like, he's trying to get out of the submission at that point too. So while he's using Riddle as a, you know, ramming him into the cage, he's trying to get out of the hole. So he'd been in it for a little while. So I get why he tapped out there. The other one, the spot that I was really kind of like, yeesh, I was a little nervous, was when he did the, what does Seth Rollins call that running throw that he does where he puts the buckle bomb? Where he had Riddle and he's on that platform and he throws him into the cage part.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, he's going to miss that platform because he can't see anywhere. Like, he does not know where he's walking. And I'm like, man, if he steps off, they're both toast.
Yeah.
So I was very like, like when I was watching that, I'm like, oh, this could go badly. It didn't. And thank God it didn't. But I was like, whew, that's not whatever. But the match, and some people's theory on this one was that they intentionally made it not great because of what came after with Bray Wyatt. I don't buy into that. Do you buy into that?
I don't know that it would have made a difference if the match was good to what happened next.
Like, if they just rushed it to kind of get people like eagerly anticipating what did come next. But yeah, I don't know. It just didn't quite live up to it for me. But the we talked about the match, and the most entertaining story was, to me, Finn Balor and Edge and the I Quit stuff. The Bray Wyatt return was the thing that maybe I wasn't the most entertained by, but I was like totally on the edge of my seat watching this. Just didn't want to miss a second of whatever this was. Cause I'm like, okay, so they've got the logo for Extreme Rules. They're going off the air. I'm doing air quotes for people that can't see me. And they go, okay, are we, and the lights go off and Michael Cole's like, are we off? Like, are we still on the air? What's going on right now? And of course, with the whole world in his hands, everybody immediately knows, okay, this is Bray Wyatt. What's happening? And they start to show the live versions, the human-sized versions of the members of the Firefly Funhouse. So they've got, you know, Mercy the Buzzard, and they've got Abby the Witch, and they've got, you know, Huskus the Pig, and they're all over the stadium, which they're doing to set up the entryway that Riddle has just left, and they're putting this door there. So then they zoom to the door, go up to the screen, show the Firefly Funhouse with cobwebs as if it's been abandoned and, you know, desolate for however long. They show the TV and a mask comes on, and I can't hear most of what he's saying, but it is kind of talking about, you know, where he's been in his head and, you know, these prisons and things. And then it comes back down to the door. Door opens, big blue light shines through it, which I think is an ode to Brody Lee. And then Wyatt comes out with the lantern. It's got the mask on, rips it off, and it is Bray Wyatt. So we're getting Bray Wyatt. We're not getting the Fiend. We're not getting, it doesn't look like the old Eater of Worlds. We're just getting a new version of Bray Wyatt. I thought this was really well done. I thought the way that they constructed this and set this up. Now, I have a million questions. Like, I have no idea if the Firefly Funhouse people are ever going to show up again. I don't know if we're going to see a stable of these people and somebody underneath all these masks are going to present themselves. I don't know what's going to happen here. And there's a lot to talk about it, because even behind, like, Abby the Witch, for example, there were two belts hanging on a railing, and everybody's assuming that that's a hint that this person is a former women's champion. I don't know if any of that's true. I don't know if any of these people are going to show up on Friday SmackDown when Bray Wyatt's supposed to appear. What'd you make of that whole segment? And two, what do you think is coming next here?
So I don't want to be a downer. I did like it, right? I did mostly like it. I think it might have been a little bit over the top. I think sometimes a little bit of restraint can go a long way. Maybe dragged on a little bit. Like, I think by the time he got to like the fifth recitation of he's got the whole word in his hand, I was getting a little bit impatient. I did think it was cool with the, you know, the sort of people in costumes of Firefly Funhouse characters. I think the lore, L-O-R-E, of Bray Wyatt is all over the place and doesn't really hold, you know, doesn't really hold any water if you actually sort of analyze it, think about it for more than like 30 seconds. But it's still, you know, it's fun. It's fun, silly wrestling stuff. But yeah, that being said, I think there was actually a little bit too much going on here. Just with like all the people in costumes, and Bray's got like a new mask. I don't know that he needs a mask, especially if he's just going to take it off in any way. The door stuff, the smoke stuff. I just thought it, some of it was a little Party City hokey to me. But that being said, I'm very glad that he's back. I do think that he's very entertaining. I do think that, you know, I also think that he needs to be maybe like reined in a little bit here and there. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, like my favorite incarnation of Bray Wyatt was the more sort of stripped back, which was still over the top, but in a sort of enjoyable way and not in a sort of corny way.
Yeah.
The sort of more stripped back, backwards cult leader vibe. I do think, so regarding your question about what I think happens next, I hope, I am buying into some of the fantasy booking stuff. I do hope that he does have a new group, a new family, if you will. I'm hoping that it's all NXT people. People pointed out that Mercy the Buzzard, the anthropomorphized version of Mercy the Buzzard, was dressed like Grayson Waller.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a pretty fun, interesting way to go. Yes, and then some, you know, some other NXT people. Joe Gacy, I think, would be actually perfect for this, and it would get him away from the stuff he's doing in NXT, which is ortho and frankly beneath him, because he is actually a very talented performer. I think this would be great for some of those guys. So I do hope that it's that's the direction they're going in. I think it would be cool. I think it might be a slow burn. I think we might get these characters revealed slowly over the course of the next couple months or something, right? Maybe by Survivor Series, we're going to have the whole team in place or something. So we'll see what happens, but I'm looking forward to SmackDown for sure.
Yeah. My hope is in watching that thing from Extreme Rules. Like, I'm with you. I would hope that Wyatt has a little bit of a group, whether it's a faction or a couple people that are with him or whatever. But my hope is that the Firefly Funhouse stuff is over. I want the Extreme Rules, what we saw there, to be the exit of that. Like, that's kind of like, here, this is what I was doing. This is sort of who we were. Now their life size, they're going to go off and do their own thing and run away. I don't know what they're going to try to set. I just don't want to see it again. I don't want these people to come out as Mercy the Buzzard. I don't want them to come out as Abby. I don't want any of that supernatural crap to go right with Bray Wyatt. I don't think it works. I think it pigeonholes the character. I think anybody who wrestles him is screwed. Like, right. There were so many times when he was the Fiend that I felt as though WWE had backed themselves into a major corner. And I don't want that to happen with Bray Wyatt. I think Bray Wyatt should be elevated way up to the top of the card, and that he should be very difficult to beat. And he is one of the strongest competitors in WWE. And he's hard to beat, but I don't want him to be making him impossible to beat because he's got this supernatural thing going on. I hope that goes away. I just think they absolutely should have used Extreme Rules to say, this is where we were, these guys are leaving, and there's new Bray Wyatt is back, and with the lantern and some sort of version mashup of his old whatever. But I don't know. I'm really curious to see this mask, obviously, that he's wearing now. I'm assuming will have something to do with his new character. They're going to sell a boatload of that merchandise, I guarantee it. So it'll be interesting to see. We'll find out on Friday. I was a little disappointed that he didn't make an appearance on Monday's Raw. They just showed the highlights from the Extreme Rules again, and then they had like a little video clip of him with the mask saying "Revel in what you are" over and over and over and over again. But I guess if you're gonna slow play this, like you said, you give little teasers and little nuggets, then it's okay. Let's talk a little bit about Monday's Raw. Let's shift gears a bit, just because so much happened. it was the season premiere of Raw, and there was a lot to go through. I don't know that we necessarily need to go in order, but let's talk about some of the biggest things that happened on the show. One, there were rumors that the Good Brothers were making their way back to WWE. We caught wind of that about a few hours before the show aired. I did not assume it would be on Monday. I thought maybe they'd come down. They showed up on Monday. Like, AJ Styles gets called out by Finn Balor. He comes down and says, hey, yeah, you're right. I probably need some friends. Me going at it alone is not a good idea. He teases that he's going to join Judgment Day. And then he says, no, I wasn't really talking about you. And out come Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows, and they fight. Mm. On paper, this is great. I love Judgment Day and the OC battling its factions. It makes a lot of sense now why Balor was attacking AJ Styles, why AJ Styles then was to go and recruit his buddies to help him out. I am not big on Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows, though.
Right.
I am a little concerned with the way they left the company, what they said when they left, their attitudes. Karl Anderson, that dude, I don't know. Like, I listen and watch him. He's a goof. Like, he just says some just wacky things. I don't know, but it sounds like WWE's been interested in bringing them back for a while. So they're under contract, and they're on the roster, and it's listed on WWE.com that they are now officially WWE superstars. So this is not a one-off. This is not like a lead up to a pay-per-view. In fact, what I'm hearing is that they're going to continue to let him, or at least the one time, wrestle for New Japan to defend his Never Open Weight Championship, probably drop it, and then come back to WWE, which happens on the same night as Crown Jewel. So he's not going to that one if that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So they obviously have longer term plans for these guys. What did you make of the return?
I actually thought it was really well done. I love anytime Balor and Styles are together. I think those two have really good chemistry, not even just in ring chemistry, just sort of when they're cutting promos together and stuff. I really like those two together. And I thought Balor really sold the whole thing well on Raw. His sort of facials when Gallows and Anderson returned were really well done. Like I mentioned earlier, it did kind of kill the momentum that they had gained from Extreme Rules a little bit, because they get worked over here. But they can recover pretty quickly. But yeah, so I mean just certainly looking forward to seeing where this goes. I mean, I Gallows and Anderson are, what you said is true. I think they kind of are normally, they're always working. I think they understand the business pretty well, and they're just always angling for an angle, I guess. And but I could certainly see why they're not everybody's cup of tea. I usually enjoy watching them, although I did find their WWE run, their 2016 to 2020 run, was pretty underwhelming. And then of course their recent AEW run was basically nothing. They were just there to stand next to Kenny Omega while he was champion. But overall, I think they've accomplished a lot in their career, and deservedly so. Their work in Japan was largely stellar. I actually think Anderson, when he's at his best, is an incredible worker. I think they're certainly, I don't know if I would necessarily say that they are assets to the WWE locker room, but I think it's probably a good thing that they're there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to absolutely elevate their, if you want to call it the faction division, because Triple H is heavily working these factions. It's going to help their tag team division. So there are pluses to this. It's not like, whatever. Luke Gallows has a lot of history in WWE, going all the way back to when he was, Festus or something. Like, he's been in WWE on and off for years. So if they're, if they're part of this team and they want to be players and they're happy to be there, and okay, cool. Like, I'm up for it. But I just got this feeling, like, on their last run, that they were just so bitter with the way that they left and were released after being signed to new contracts, that I didn't ever see them coming back, to be honest with you. So it was kind of a surprise to me. Brock Lesnar also makes a return to WWE. I did not see this one coming. Makes a lot of sense that it's the season premiere of Raw and a big name like that would show up. I love it. Like, I absolutely love that he's going after Lashley, and we're going to get Lesnar and Lashley too. I also love that you don't need the title around Lashley's waist to have this feud. So get rid of it. Get it on Seth Rollins. I thought that was set up very nicely, that Lashley, takes a beating. We don't necessarily know why, but we could probably date it back to the Royal Rumble when Lesnar lost and Lashley was a heel. He's just out to get revenge a little bit, I guess. And Seth Rollins takes advantage of it, cons Lashley in by, questioning his patriotism and what have you, which we all know that Lashley, with his former background, is going to accept and he loses. So he's got the title off of him. Seth Rollins has it now, which I think is great for the United States Championship. I love Lashley and Lesnar too. I think this is going to be awesome. Don't know where they're going to do it, but I think it's really cool. And anytime Lesnar comes back, it's a big pop. Fans love it. So what did you make of his return?
I thought it was really well done. And I think certainly, what else can you do with Lesnar other than have him feud with Lashley right now? I think it's the best. I think if you're bringing Lesnar back into the fold and you're looking at that roster and you're looking at that, the cards and the way the show's being booked, I think that's the most logical place to put him, really. So I'm looking forward to seeing where they go from here. And it's probably a good decision too. I think, Rollins has lost a lot of matches this year. He's lost a lot of matches on pay-per-view this year. So there's, there's multiple ways to look at this. One is that you could say, does he really deserve to be champion if you're looking at it on paper, right? If they did do rankings, he wouldn't really be in contention because he's lost so much this year. But, in the real world, because he's put so many people over this year, he deserves a run as United States champion at the very least, right?
Yeah.
Happy for Rollins. Intrigued to see who's going to challenge Rollins for that title. I would like to see that title get built up a bit more. I think Lashley did a pretty good job of getting the ball rolling on that. Don't really want to see it flip-flopping back and forth between people anymore. It's historically a prestigious title, and it just hasn't been booked that way for the last couple of years. So I'm hoping they can fix that.
Yeah, I think putting it on Seth Rollins does accomplish that, because if there's anybody, like, Lashley's way over and he's awesome, but if there's anybody at his level or even higher, it's Seth Rollins. So I don't think you're going to have that title around Seth Rollins' waist and then have it leave his waist right away. Right. I think this puts him in some matches with some really good, strong mid-card guys. Like you talked about Ricochet. I could see something like that. Those types of wrestlers where there's going to be some pretty grade A matches that Rollins will win. So I think it'll give him some of those wins back. It'll put that title in a good spot. It'll elevate some people who are going to wrestle Seth Rollins. I think that's going to be good too. Speaking of guys who have lost a lot, Austin Theory loses again. He has lost so many times. Johnny Gargano beat him in what I guess is the student versus teacher match that they had here. I get it. Austin Theory owns the Money in the Briefcase. He could lose every match until he cashes that in. Then we're all going to forget that he lost all those matches because he's now got the title. But so you can afford this, I suppose. But do you think this hurts Austin Theory? Like, he keeps losing. Like, this is not, I know wins and losses aren't that huge a thing, but when you have a guy like Austin Theory, who is really, if you had to pick pillars in WWE, he might be one of them. Mm-hmm. He keeps losing. So how problematic is that? Or is it at all?
Yeah, certainly an interesting choice. I guess that Money in the Bank briefcase makes him impervious to whatever the theoretical negative impact of consistently losing is. Although we just saw Rollins win a title despite losing a bunch this year too. It's weird. He's young. He'll recover. He's losing to people who are, who are better than him on paper. So, there's no conflict, logical sort of conflict there. It makes sense that he would lose to Johnny Gargano because Johnny Gargano is a better wrestler than Austin Theory. I don't know. It's hard to say, really. I think it is going to make it. I mean, we all know when he does cash in, he's going to do it in a very sneaky, heelish, dastardly way regardless. So I guess it doesn't really matter if he's winning or not beforehand. So yeah.
I want to talk before we close things off here about my winner and loser for the show. So my winner there was some really cool stuff. You'll see the Lesnar thing. Dominic Mysterio was so booed when he opened his mouth after hitting his dad. Yeah. It's like, this is great. Like, this is exactly what WWE wants for Dom. Like, it's just perfect, right? He was just absolutely booed out of to the point where he couldn't say what he wanted to say. And you could tell the other people in Judgment Day, like, dude, just eat this up. Like, this is perfect. This is exactly what you want. Let it fester. Like, don't rush this. Let it sink in. They're booing you. That's exactly what you want. I thought that was a huge win. The lose for me was DX. I did not like this close. I did not like really their involvement in it. I get it. They're just doing nostalgia stuff. This is probably the last time we're going to see them. Maybe if ever, because even Shawn Michaels alluded to it. He's like, we're doing this again in 25 years. Put us out of our misery. Like, we are old and whatever. I thought Road Dogg was somewhat of a nuisance. I liked X-Pac was my favorite of all of them. He gave a shout out to China, and I thought he was very professional.
Yeah.
The rest of them were, it was just goofy. I get that was the plan. That was the intention. I just was a little much for me. And to close the show and not really take advantage of you putting anybody else over or whatever, I didn't love it. I get it. Nostalgia, decent way to close the show. Just didn't love it.
Yeah, Judgment Day should have come and beat them up or something, right? I mean, it was kind of silly, goofy. I think they dressed... I mean, look, I love DX as much as anyone. Back in the day, I was a big DX fan. I had a DX t-shirt. I used to do suck it's on the soccer field, just like anyone. This was kind of like... I think they drastically overestimate their sort of importance in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, like I think they kind of think of themselves a lot more highly than fans actually currently think of them. You're right about Road Dogg. I think X-Pac is the best. I think if we're talking ideologically in real life, X-Pac is certainly the most bearable former member of DX. He's just a really good guy in IRL. Whereas Road Dogg, I wouldn't feel comfortable saying that he's a good person. So it was just kind of goofy. And I did write about this as well. It was cool to see Corey Graves vaguely allude to Scissor Me Daddy Ass.
Yeah. How does he call it? He referencing one of the most over things in wrestling is office supplies. I mean, it's perfect, right? Yeah. Like, so, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but I thought that was a lose for me. The one thing I am curious about, and we only have about a minute left, is I'm interested in what happens next week. Cause we've got Lashley's challenge Lesnar. Dexter Lumis gets a match with The Miz. If he wins, he gets a contract. There's a lot going on next week, so it should be. And Elias is making his return. Elias, like, did we think that was happening? I don't know.
To Elias, wow.
Yeah, so he's officially coming back. No more Ezekiel, it doesn't seem. So Elias has grown a beard, a full-on beard in 2 months, which is really impressive because I can't grow one like that in 2 years. So there you go. Anyway, Norman, I appreciate it. That was a fun rundown of both Extreme Rules and Monday Night Raw. For everybody else that is listening to this, we appreciate that you're doing so. Check it out on your favorite podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We greatly appreciate it. And until we get another chance to talk to you on the podcast, check out thesportster.com for all the news and rumors, and we'll keep up to you on these shows. So, Norman, thanks, and we'll talk to you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.